Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Americana Music Profiles is sponsored by BetterHelp. BetterHelp is the world's leading online therapy platform. The mission of BetterHelp is to make professional therapy accessible, affordable, and convenient, so anyone who struggles with life's challenges can get help anytime, anywhere. BetterHelp offers access to licensed, trained, experienced, and accredited psychologists, marriage and family therapists, clinical social workers, and board-licensed professional counselors. An extensive study by the Berkeley Well-Being Institute found BetterHelp to be as effective as face-to-face therapy. And now for a limited time, when you access BetterHelp, you will receive a 10% discount off of your first month. To activate this 10% discount, use my link at betterhelp.com/Americana.
Thanks for tuning into Americana Music Profiles. The next episode starts right now.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Kevin Slick has been writing and recording music for over 40 years. Performing in the folk, singer-songwriter, Americana tradition, he has shared the stage with artists like Pete Seeger, David Bromberg, and the Blues Travelers. His latest album, Coming Home, features originals and some covers, including the seldom-seen classic, Wait a Minute. Kevin joins me on this edition of Americana Music Profiles to talk about that new record and his journey through his musical career.
Good afternoon, Kevin. Welcome to the podcast.
Nice to be here.
Thanks for taking the time out of your sunny Colorado day to chat with me this afternoon on a Friday as we head into the weekend.
Glad to do it.
Colorado, I think you mentioned when we were off the air that that's not home originally, right? You're from the East Coast?
Yeah, I grew up in central Pennsylvania, where Penn State University is located, State College, Pennsylvania, or Happy Valley, as it's often known.
Oh, yeah.
Then I lived in Philadelphia for about a decade, and then moved on up to New York City for a while, and then came out here.
How long have you been out there?
I moved here in about 2005.
Okay.
So,
long enough to get familiar with the territory.
Yeah.
And you have. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say it's a great music scene out here, as probably a lot of people that are into roots music, Americana music, and bluegrass and such.
Yeah.
You know. Telluride and Rocky Grass and,
yeah.
and that whole scene. It's just a great community and very involved, very participatory community. The jam sessions in the bluegrass world, of course, have been hit by COVID, but they're coming back. And before that, probably on any given night of the week, you could find two or three really good jam sessions that you could go to at a bar or a coffee shop or something like that at least in the general Denver metro area. And just play music and have a great time. You could do that every night of the week if you wanted to.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of people comment on how much fun it is to be in Colorado playing music. I was talking to a gentleman from Ottawa actually earlier today, and they're very jealous of the ability for musicians to be able to get out and share your craft in this country. They're still struggling to get out from underneath some of the lockdowns and get back out to playing music. So it's easy to forget how blessed we are to be able to do that.
Indeed.
So you started off on the East Coast, but you've been doing the music thing for a long time, right?
Yeah, I have been writing songs and performing and doing also sort of traditional folk music in the, you know, inspired by people like Pete Seeger, Woody Guthrie, that sort of thing. Since back in the late 70s when I was in college, and started putting out recordings probably in the mid 80s when the recording technology made it possible to record stuff at home easier. And I think one of the things that was wonderful at that time too was the cassette was becoming more the dominant music, you know, delivery system. So for a few hundred bucks, you could put out a cassette, you know, shrink wrapped and looking like a very professional product. Whereas before it was like, wow, you're going to press an album. Gosh, it's cost so much money. You know, when are you ever going to be able to do that? So yeah, I've been doing that. And then since being out here in Colorado, I've been playing predominantly bluegrass music, mostly mandolin in different groups. And recently started doing also some solo gigs again. And it seems the bluegrass world is also kind of expanding with artists like Billy Strings and Molly Tuttle and people like that, as well as all the jam bands out here. And I found, well, gosh, I can play this kind of music I've been writing and performing for a long time. Again, it's more in the folk roots Americana vein. And I can even do it at a bluegrass festival because people are into it and they're appreciative of it. So that was partly why I called the one new release Coming Home, because it's like, oh, yeah, I can come back. I can come back to my musical home and just kind of play this wide variety of stuff. Go from, you know, original songs to Pete Seeger to Bill Monroe to an old Carter Family song or traditional, you know, folk ballads or whatever.
Yeah, the genre has opened up quite a bit in the last, what, maybe 10 years to expand out. And especially some of the younger kids, you know, coming out of Berkeley and places like that love the traditional approach, but have a I heard somebody at the IBMA called Twisted Pine. The young girl plays a flute, but it's a bluegrass band, and it's you know that it's you would never ever expect that, but it sounds amazing, and you know, it's and it fits, so it's cool.
Yeah, I saw them at Rocky Grass, and then at IBMA, and in fact, after one of their performances at IBMA, I was involved in a conversation with several bluegrass folks, you know, who've been in the biz for a long time. And they were just floored.
Yeah.
You know, like, what was that? Right? That was amazing. Yeah. It's the greatest thing I ever saw.
Yeah. And we felt that way.
Yeah, it has the feel, it has the vibe. And I think this is such an exciting time to be in the roots music kind of community, and especially the bluegrass community. One of the things I love about the bluegrass community is the community. The fact that people get together and they jam and they play. And they interact, and to me, any artistic genre, whether it's music or film or theater, whatever, if it survives, it will diversify, and the diversity is a signal of the strength. And so, yeah, when I go to IBMA and see, you know, well, that the one night the Twisted Pine played, it was like Twisted Pine, and then the Price Sisters right after, which I thought was fantastic because I love the Price Sisters. They're some of my favorite music. Yeah. The vocals are just killer. And it's like, wow, here's two great bands back to back with energy and enthusiasm, and it sounds great. And, you know, you might on first look, you might be, gosh, what do they have in common?
Right, right. Yeah.
But it's there. And I love that we're seeing more of that diversity and openness. And, you know, I see some of the music I'm doing now, and I'm still playing bluegrass as well. I play in a group called Orchard Creek Band, play mandolin. And I see a lot of the music I'm putting out now in recordings as in some ways being roots of bluegrass music, you know, that it didn't just burst from Bill Monroe's forehead like Zeus in, you know, mythology or something like that. Yeah. He was listening to the blues, certainly with Arnold Schultz and the Carter Family and people like that. And so I think actually you honor the roots of bluegrass music by playing a wider diversity of sounds that have mm-hmm. more of the roots mm-hmm. and maybe the Celtic traditions and things like that in the blues and country and folk and ballads, rather than just, well, we're just going to strictly imitate or interpret this one narrow band of the,
mm-hmm.
you know, it'd be like if rock and roll, if they still had record stores. I don't know if they do any place anymore, but you'd go there. Right. And if the only thing that was there was Little Richard and Chuck Berry, it's right. like, well, that's great.
Yeah.
But what happened to Led Zeppelin and the Beatles and Black Sabbath and
yeah.
Pink Floyd and everything else?
Yeah. 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 It's interesting. I read in some of the press notes that in your earlier start, you actually were hanging with some of the playing on some of the cool stages in the Northeast, and including CBGB. You know, what is the
yes.
when you're, if you could remember those days, mm-hmm. is there, could you see yourself where you are today? Did you have that much thought ahead as to what you were doing with your music?
I don't know if I could have imagined it exactly, but I was certainly, I grew up hearing folk music and, mm-hmm. and bluegrass music because it was what my parents played on the records at mm-hmm. home. And
okay.
In fact, we went, there was a great place called Sunset Park down on the Pennsylvania-Maryland border
mm-hmm.
That had bluegrass shows. And so I have photos of myself at like 8 years old with Lester Flatt,
oh,
you know,
cool.
at a show,
okay.
like
yeah.
talking to him or something like that. And so I grew up listening to this kind of music. And in some ways, even though at that time in the late 80s, 90s, when I was playing places like CBGBs and that sort of thing, and the band I was playing with could have been considered, well, I don't know, people debated whether we were world music or punk or what exactly mm-hmm. we were. I don't know. But I saw the rise of the punk scene in like the 80s as being totally in line with folk traditions I had been, you know, I had grown up with, because mm-hmm. these were people that were making their own records, you know,
mm-hmm.
they were often talking about topical issues. They were putting together their own shows and doing their own thing. And that to me is just really exciting, where it's like, okay, well, we want to put out a record. Well, then let's find a tape recorder. We'll
yeah,
record some songs.
Yeah.
And then how do we do it? Oh, we got to press it. Oh, great. Okay. Now we need to design the cover. Well, someone draw a picture and we'll go down to Kinko's and, you know, make 400 copies
right,
or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Glue them on the thing. And, I love that. I love that sort of thing of, and that's just one of the things that's really remarkable of where we are right now, is that people can do that
yeah.
and make it available to people and share it with the world. You know, I guess if there's a downside, it's that, gosh, there's so much stuff out there. How can you possibly listen to it all? But that's kind of a good problem to have.
Yeah, yeah.
There's just so much good stuff.
We're going to pause for just a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the interview.
A painter can buy a canvas and paint mm-hmm. and have the copy ready to share with whoever is following their work. And mm-hmm. kind of like you mentioned earlier, that wasn't always the case for musicians.
Yeah.
You know, cassette tapes, the basement tapes kind of opened that up. But now, I mean, you know, anybody with a decent cell phone can record their own music and share it with an audience. And so that
yeah.
expression, or the accessibility to the form of expression, has changed the music landscape.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons why you mentioned a lot of the young artists in the bluegrass and roots community being so skilled, is that they have access to this. You know, I talk with some of these people at Rocky Grass or other festivals where I play and such, and you know, you find, well, here these people can really intelligently talk about, you know, obscure Stanley Brothers recordings.
Right.
And John Coltrane and Jimi Hendrix and, you know, some like obscure folk music from Russia or something like that, mm-hmm. you know, played on the fiddle or the, you know, balalaika or whatever like that, because they've listened to it and they have access to it. I used to have to go with my friends. We would do like a road trip into Greenwich Village, you know, to look in old record stores to find these like obscure records we had heard about, you know, heard about the Monroe Brothers. Where are you going to find a Monroe Brothers? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. You know, like you got to go to some obscure place to find it, or somebody that, you know, will make a tape for you. And now it's like, well, if you can spell it, you can type it in on your phone.
Right,
and,
right.
Ooh, there
yeah.
it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to Slim Jim Phantom from the Stray Cats, a while back, and we kind of had a similar conversation, but about rockabilly. And, mm-hmm. you know, he was making the connection between rockabilly and bluegrass, and kind of the same thing mm-hmm. is happening with the rockabilly music, is that the younger generation is now finding it because they're able to find buried on the internet somewhere on somebody's hard drive a song by somebody that you've never heard of before, but it becomes this new obsession, and it's mm-hmm. it's bringing the music back around, but in a different way than it was originally yeah. recorded. And so it's the accessibility of it has really made it interesting to be a music fan these days.
Yeah, I think it's remarkable. It's quite wonderful.
Tell me about your songwriting journey. Has that always been a part of your music? Is that from the beginning?
Actually, even from an early age, my father was an electrical engineer, and then eventually he moved over to teaching at Penn State University. Mm. But we always had pretty good stereo equipment around the house, and tape recorders. We had reel-to-reel tape recorders, several of them.
Okay, cool.
And so he would record, you know, bluegrass events, festival things, stuff like that. I would sit around and make up songs when I was 8, 9, 10 years old. Fortunately, none of those have survived, right? Although they might be quite amusing to listen to, I don't know. But I always did that sort of thing. And then, you know, starting to play guitar and listening to like Bob Dylan and Neil Young, mm-hmm. Paul Simon, mm-hmm. people like that, it was like, well, okay, that's what people do. They play guitar and they write songs. So, you know, we just try to do that. And so it grew. And then by the time I was in college, I was starting to do it a little more seriously and also play in coffee houses and mm-hmm. such. And I worked in radio for a while. Mm. So during that time I had, you know, access to even better sort of recording equipment where I could actually gather a bunch of friends together and, you know, make some recordings that didn't sound too bad.
Yeah.
But I've always loved the art form of recording and see it as kind of a unique art form connected to, but also separate from songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
In that there are songs that I really love, that I've known, you know, for years, and there's also recordings that maybe are like, for example, "Sleepwalk" by Santo and Johnny. Mm-hmm. It's like one of the greatest records ever made.
Hmm.
The sound of that is just so fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Or George Harrison's "All Things Must Pass" album. Mm-hmm. Again, the recordings of those are so amazing. The individual songs might not be songs that I would sing a lot myself or, you know, have that much connection to, but the recording of them is great. And so I've always been interested in, you know, how to translate a song, how to share a song via a recording. And it can run the gamut from, you know, "All Things Must Pass," which huge collection of musicians, to a lot of the music that these days I've been going back and listening to that has inspired me, I think, with sort of how I've been approaching recording lately, is Jim Croce and Cat Stevens and people like that, where it's like, you listen to it and there's two guys with guitars maybe and some singing and that's it. Like that's the record. That's all you need, really.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful kind of approach. And again, you know, I also love listening to the big symphonic orchestra and the big, you know, production and the whole thing too. So and I think over time, I working in radio for a long time was a big part of the songwriting. I worked in radio for about 10 years, I guess. Okay. And so I was listening to music all the time. And at a certain point, I began to study it a little bit more and think about, okay, well, if I'm going to write a song, you know, how can I make it work as best as it possibly can? You know, is that word choice really the best choice?
Mm-hmm.
Should I put a bridge in here? Should I change this chord structure in some way? I began to appreciate the art form of popular songwriting. You know, a good pop song that is catchy and memorable, and maybe not terribly long, but just it comes out. And so I often will use the term pop music when referring to someone, say like Molly Tuttle, some of her recordings, or Sierra Hall had that album, I think Weighted Mind was the name of it. And when I say pop music, I'm meaning it's a song that has a really strong hook. And it's really well presented. You know, there's no wasted moments in the recording. It's just everything works together like that. So, so I've tried to do that more in recent years, I think, too.
Your new record, Coming Home, that's the name of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think you've, and maybe I've got this correct, you've got a few covers, but not all covers, or is it an all cover?
There are a few covers
okay.
on there, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a few, and then a reasonable amount of originals on there.
Mm-hmm.
And when I do covers, I usually try to do something pretty different than whatever would be the well-known recorded version of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like, well, if the song's been done well one way, why just duplicate it?
Yeah.
And if it's a good song, it can be done quite differently.
Yeah.
So, for example, Wait a Minute.
I love what you did with that.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It like that by the Seldom Scene is like, well, how are you possibly going to, you know, top that? To me, that's heavenly.
Right. You don't make it better, you make it different, right?
Yeah. So it's a sad song. It's an introspective song.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe doing it in a very sparse kind of way might bring out a different part of the song for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's often what I like to do is we'll kind of confound people's expectations of what they might be expecting to hear.
Yeah. When I first heard, I'm like, wait a minute, is that the Seldom Seen song? Oh, it is. Yeah. So yeah, that was great. And the record is out now. Is that right?
Yes. That one is out, Coming Home. And I actually have an EP that's coming out. This week as we're recording it, February 23rd, that has a bunch of, original songs on it that are a little bit more, I'd say topical or people's music kind of songs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I just felt like they kind of fit better on a separate recording from the Coming Home one, which is the Coming Home. If there's a theme of it, it's basically this is the kind of music I've done for a long time on my own, and I'm now having the opportunity to do it, to play it some more.
Mm.
And it's also kind of fitting. It feels like it fits better now within this kind of bluegrass roots world that I'm involved in. So, yeah.
And you have plans to be out this spring and summer on the road with your music?
I'll be playing with the group that I'm playing with now, Orchard Creek Band. We'll be playing several bluegrass festivals this summer.
Okay.
And I'll no doubt be doing some more solo gigs as well, and probably some more recording, because again, as I've seen that there's a place for this kind of sound you know, is more accepted within the kind of world working in these days. I've been, you know, writing songs seriously for 35, 40 years now. Mm-hmm. So I've got a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And I'm also looking at like, well, gosh, I could go back and pull out these 20 songs and, you know, and record them and present that too. Yeah. So that's kind of an exciting thing right now. So we're getting sort of an avalanche of stuff coming out.
Folks want to get in touch, want to hear some of the new stuff or keep in touch with what you're working on in the future, what's the best way to do that?
I would say kevinslick.com. The website will have links to all the different stuff. You can find any of the music pretty much on all the streaming services or YouTube or anything like that too, but kevinslick.com is the best spot just to drop me a line or listen to some stuff, or you can actually buy physical copies there for those people who still like to hold the thing in their hand.
Right. Yeah. Well, we hope that's coming back a little bit. So
yes, that would be nice.
New record is called Coming Home. Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate the chance to catch up with you about this and look forward to what you got coming up.
Thank you so much. It's been great.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frunino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.